This conference will now be recorded.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome to the 2012 Resolve Teleseminar Series. My name is Ann Belden, and I'm a volunteer with Resolve. And tonight's teleseminar is entitled Peer-to-Peer, Why Should I Join or Start a Support Group? And the presenters with us tonight are Denny and Lisa Czak, who I'll be introducing in just a moment. But before we get started, I just want to say that over 90% of the events and services provided by Resolve are done so through the generosity of volunteers, just such as people like Denny and Lisa tonight. So anytime you attend a Resolve event, including support groups, symposia, if you call our helplines or attend seminars of any kind, most likely the service was provided by a volunteer. And so Resolve really wants to thank Denny and Lisa Czak for providing this information that they'll be sharing with us tonight. And so again, the title of tonight's seminar is Peer-to-Peer, Why Should I Join a Support Group? The format of tonight's seminar is that Denny and Lisa will be speaking for around 20 to 30 minutes. And then if there are any questions from the audience, we can take them at that time. But we ask people listening to just remember that the teleseminar is being recorded. And so keep that in mind when you ask questions. That anything you say, you know, will be on that recording, which will be on our website. So I would like to just quickly introduce our speakers tonight. Denny is an author and ardent advocate of family building rights. Denny and Lisa live in Tucson, Arizona. And with Lisa, his wife, and their formerly poor quality embryo 9-year-old, Ileana Faith. Denny's musings on the pursuit of parenthood and infertility have been featured in Resolve's national newsletter, The Good Men Project, and the Arizona Daily Star. And Denny has appeared on several radio programs as well as on the CBS Early Show. Denny and Lisa founded the first couples infertility support group in the country under the auspices of the Harvard Mind-Body Clinic. Denny plans to use the recent publication of his book, Almost a Father, to expand the reach of his infertility support efforts to the growing millions of women and men in this country and abroad who will face medically assisted parenthood. And so with that great introduction, I would like to turn it over to both of you tonight. Thanks so much.
Okay, well, thank you for that introduction. And we wanted to just start off, since both of us are on the phone, just start off a little bit talking about when we realized that we really needed to have a support system beyond just our standard family and friends in the fertility process. And I'll start with my experience, and Lisa will either jump in as we're going along or just kind of do her perspective. But I think there was a point in the fertility site and all of our different fertility cycles where I kind of realized that our normal support system of family and friends who weren't going through infertility, it just wasn't providing us with what we needed. And as friends and family were hearing us talk about the different cycles, we kind of get that glazed over look in their eyes, and they really didn't understand what we were talking about. And as a guy, I was very uncomfortable talking about anything having to do with the sexual reproduction system. I wanted it to be that Hollywood version of procreation, where you just suddenly get the positive pregnancy test and the orchestral swell of music, and then boom, you're on your way. But unfortunately, that's not the way it happened for us. And for me, I was very closed off at first to the idea of anything having to do with support. And because guys just don't, in general, don't want to talk about this kind of stuff. And the guys I grew up with were already kind of pursuing their biological parent pursuits, and fertility was not on the horizon for them. But I found out early on that I had a low sperm count. And so it was one of those things where I really didn't want to talk about it. But there, after a while, the not having anyone to talk to about it, not being able to relate my own experiences of trying to provide a sample on demand in a clinic, it became really stressful. And just all the financial buildup of cycles, as they got more complex, they got more expensive, they got more involved, and the acronyms became more confusing, I really began to want to understand more of the world that Lisa was in, and just figure out how to talk about this stuff with other people who were going through it. So And a lot of the procedures just got more and more high tech. The failures added up, and I didn't understand. I felt when we started really began, I really began to feel alone, and Lisa and I really were having a hard time talking about it because I know her experience going through it and being the person who was being poked and prodded was much different from mine.
Well, I wanted to talk about it all the time,
yeah,
constantly, and Denny never wanted to talk about it. So that was a huge thing right there. When Denny says that he was reluctant to talk to anyone, that's putting it mildly. He swore me to secrecy.
Yeah.
When we first, I'll never forget when I got that call from the doctor, and the doctor said, your husband has a sperm count of 1,000,000. And I was educated, so I knew that that was not a good thing. 1,000,000 sounds like a lot, but I knew in the fertility world that was not a good thing. And how was I going to tell him? And like from the point of that phone call, the second of that phone call, that's when I felt totally alone. And then Denny telling me, you cannot tell anyone. Swear to me, you will never tell anyone. We will never, ever tell anyone. We won't speak of this. We don't need medical intervention. God will help us. It's God's will. He, you know, there's nothing you can't do without faith in God. But I knew in my heart that, like, I wanted to jump right into IVF. And Denny's still thinking, no, 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 we can just have more sex, more sex. That's all we need. And so, like, that's when I felt completely alone, like even separate from Denny, because I realized, oh my gosh, what are we going to do? Because no one else around us, it was foreign, no one else around us, they were just all popping out babies left and right, you know, one pregnancy announcement after another. And that's when I realized, oh my gosh, are there any other couples out there going through this? Is it just my husband, the only unlucky one in the world that has this, you know, low sperm count and is in denial and doesn't want to do the treatment? And
I would try talking with other friends just to share with them. But I could see the discomfort in their face when I talked about, providing a sample or, you know, being in the room with a doctor and the ultrasound wand. It's just the conversations were very short. And I really realized that we needed to talk to people beyond that. And honestly, it also got to a point where the pain of just the different family events as other people were getting pregnant and we weren't, it was very difficult because we didn't have anyone to share some of those little, some occasional dark feelings you have when everybody else is getting pregnant and you're not. You want to be happy for them and look at them as a beacon of hope, but sometimes it just doesn't happen. And I felt guilty. I felt guilty about having those feelings or having those kind of little resentments that built up. And it got to the point where we really realized that we needed to try to seek out a support system beyond what we were doing. And that's where we started learning about the Resolve support groups. And I know Lisa did a lot of that legwork to find the support groups.
We had some bad experiences, not through Resolve, I'll add, through just our doctor's offices. We went to a support group where there was a counselor running the group, and we spent most of the time explaining to her, not just us, but the other couples there, explaining to her what all the acronyms meant. What's IUI? What's IVF? And it was really annoying because that's not why we were there. So that was, you know, a bad experience. And then I went to a women's only support group. Again, none of this was through Resolve. I want to make that clear. Resolve wouldn't have groups like that. And in the women's only, it was at a restaurant. It was very uncomfortable because, you know, we're in a public place and you're talking about female anatomy, male anatomy. There's kids around you. And the main thing that was missing from that group was Denny. Like, I kept thinking the whole group, gosh, something's missing. Something's missing. What is it? And then I looked over to my right and I thought, Denny should be here. Why are we doing this alone? Why, you know, this is crazy. It just is alienating us even more. And so that's when we finally found Resolve and we contacted them and said, hey, you know, can we start a couple support group here? We'd like to run it and have it be a peer run group. Just for me, with that kind of bad experience with the counselor, I just thought, I just wanted a place. I mean, I did it for selfish reasons, to be honest with you. I needed someplace. Denny needed someplace to be where we could just bitch and moan about infertility if we wanted to. And it's funny because when you think about a support group, you might think, oh my gosh, everyone's crying and it's very intense and heavy. And yes, there were times like that when people failed cycles or people lost babies and had miscarriages. And, you know, there is heartache and, you know, just your heart is ripped out in this process. But it's also laughing through tears. Like, I've never laughed so hard as I had in those support groups that we had. You know, the guys especially, like Denny would really open up about giving samples. And we live in a smaller town in Tucson, and in our doctors and the clinics here, you just go to a public bathroom. It's not like a masturbatorium like what you have at the bigger clinics, like the one that we ultimately went to, St. Barnabas. And I never really got that. Like, I would just say, Denny, you're such a baby. My God, what's the big deal? Take the cup, go in the bathroom, do your business, and come out. Well, it wasn't until those support groups that I realized, wow, that's really embarrassing to, like, be handed this cup and say, okay, you've got, whatever, 10 minutes to get the job done, and then you have to go into this public bathroom. I never really thought about what that was like for a guy, and I started feeling really bad that I was like kind of focused on myself, like, well, you're not the one that has to have shots and you're not the one that has to be invaded, you know, with a vaginal ultrasound. And I just never thought about that until I heard Denny talk at these groups. And then he really got, like, even some guys who came in there, you know, who were not willing to talk at first, arms crossed, legs crossed, body language saying, I'm not saying anything. Like, by the end of the meeting, their first meeting, they'd be talking all about their masturbation and what they had to do to get the job done. And like I said, there was a lot of laughter too. And a lot of friendships, lifetime friendships are formed in those groups. There's people that we still talk to and love dearly because they were our lifelines. When you go to the support group, you meet other people who are going through the same experience you are, and they really become your lifeline because you realize, wow, I'm not alone in this. Like, there are other people out there, because when you first find out, it's very isolating unless you happen to, you know, have other people that, you know, loved ones in your life who are going through it. We didn't have that experience. So for me, those friendships we formed, they were my lifeline. They literally saved us in every way.
Yeah, they did. I mean, and that's probably the big thing, is that the support group expands beyond just those sessions, the friendships and the relationships that you develop. And and Lisa mentioned how it was enlightening for her to hear my viewpoint on everything that I went through. But it was the same thing for me, hearing all these women talk about all the ultrasounds and the shots and the tests and the urinary tract infections and everything was just, it made me really appreciate how much they were going through just for a chance, just for a shot at having a child. And it really brought Lisa and I closer, because I think the hardest thing for guys is it's an ego bruise. You want to, for me, I wanted to be the one who did my biological duty and got my wife pregnant. So all of a sudden, when I couldn't deliver on that, I kind of withdrew, and the intimacy of my vision of having a baby and how we would have a baby had to be altered. It had to be changed. And for a while, it was very difficult for me to deal with that. But then when we were in the support groups and I heard couples talk about it, and they found a common ground. The men found a way to understand what their wives were going through, and wives found a way to understand what the men were going through. And I think we really understood the relationship that exists and the protective nature of how guys don't want to see their wives in pain. And a lot of things came out in the groups that was just magical and really helped us all to either get all the negative, toxic stuff out so that we could go on to that next cycle, or just laugh and make fun of all the stuff that we had to go through, and just those unique events where you're like, I can't believe that just happened. I can't believe, you know, I was in a public bathroom doing this when the cleaning lady walked in. And I mean, we're telling these stories because those are experiences you only have if you're in the infertility world, or what it's like the first time your wife has a man use an ultrasound wand on her. It's like, it's just, you feel like this is really not natural. But then when you're in a support group with other people who've gone through it, you realize it normalizes. It makes you feel like, okay, this is just our experience. This is going to be our parenthood experience. And it feels like, okay, it's all right. we can all, everybody's had their own experiences like this, and it's all right. It's okay. And then also just the wealth of information, though, that we all got from each other, the tips on, okay, if you're giving your wife a shot, what you can do to make sure you don't kill her with an air bubble, you know, what you can do to ice up that spot that's been, that's where the shots, the progesterone shots have gone in 100 times, or what pharmacy has offering a good deal on the fertility drugs you're going to be using this month. I mean, just all the support we got and information from all of us, you just bounce back and forth in these support groups. And the Resolve groups had so much information just built into them that we just, it was a lifeline that I honestly believe got us to the point where we ultimately achieved our success mm-hmm. and had our daughter.
And online support groups are wonderful. They saved us when we went out to St. Barnabas. We went from Tucson to New Jersey for our 11th IVF cycle, our last and final one, and that saved me because I didn't have my core group that I had here in Tucson, but I had, you know, the boards. I had the Resolve board, the message boards, and where I could go to an online community. But I don't think that the online support group can replace what you get out of a in-person peer-to-peer support group, because there's something different about talking to couples face-to-face about all these intimate, gory details that you kind of miss when you are online. And so I think it's a great supplement to have both. Have, you know, your online support for when you need it, you know, like immediately. Like I would use that like in an emergency, you know what I mean? Like, gosh, I just got a negative beta again, or, you know, I'm just so stressed out about this, or Danny's really pissing me off, bitching about having to do another cycle. So I go on the message boards and immediately I can get a response and I can feel better. But knowing like once a month that we were going to meet as a group, I looked forward to that so much, which is weird to say. Like, I don't know. I think that's weird because you think infertility is this horrible experience. And yet I looked forward to that every month. Just, and the meetings always ran over because we always stayed after and talked. And, you know, we just, like I said, we just built this friendship. And a lot of things come out in those support groups that maybe couples are embarrassed to talk about. And you need a safe place to talk about it, like the whole thing with baby making sex. People who haven't been through infertility think, how awesome, you get to have sex all the time, unprotected sex all the time. Like they don't get that. Yeah, at first it's fun, but then it becomes a chore.
Yeah.
It's no fun anymore when you're just looking at your husband and just going, you know what, just stick it in. Just stick it in and get it over with. I'm done. I don't want to do foreplay. I'm ovulating. Get to the point and be done with it. And it, you know, like we would discuss that in these support groups and we would all kind of laugh and joke about it. And sometimes we cry about it because it is sad that, you know, it's a whole part of when you're young, you don't think, oh, I'm going to go through infertility to get pregnant. No, you think I'm going to find someone, fall in love, and have a magical night of lovemaking, and we're going to make a baby out of it.
And that was another thing that the guys could talk about openly too, performance anxiety. I mean, just the idea that you went from really wanting to have it be a pleasurable experience to something that was utilitarian. You're suddenly trying to accomplish a goal, and that really changes the whole feel of it. And it's unique to people who go through infertility, I think, if you're still trying the old-fashioned way with drugs and everything, it really becomes a topic that it came up a lot in the support groups that we were in.
And I remember at the one support group, we all kind of had a light bulb moment, and we said, you know what? It seems like you just need to accept the fact that it's just not going to happen on its own. Your sex is not going to produce a baby. And it's like once Denny and I had that mindset, our sex life was great again. But it's like we had to like let go of that and say, you know what, this is not going to happen this way. Let's just enjoy each other and let the doctors take care of getting us pregnant. Let them do their job and we'll just have some fun. But it took a lot of horrible years of sex and baby making sex, I mean, to get to that point. But like I said, I think that if we had the support groups sooner on, like we didn't have this, what, until how long was it, Danny? Like 4 years?
4 years, yeah.
4 years, we were kind of just on our own, like online, you know, muddling around. And so it wasn't until like our last 2 years of trying that we finally had a good core support group that we had. But those first 4 years were really rough for us, not having that, even though I did have the online support, but I was alone in that. And Denny didn't support that. He felt like I was getting obsessed, you know, like I'd wake up in the morning is the first thing I do, you know, not kiss my husband good morning. I'd wake up, turn the computer on. What's going on the boards? What did so-and-so get pregnant? You know, did their cycle work? You know, what's going on? And so that's why I really want to start up another support group here in Tucson. When we found out that there wasn't a support group here in Tucson anymore, I thought, wow, we need to give back again, because that saved us. That saved our life, those 2 years.
Yeah,
so,
and I think that speaks to the final point of the why should I start a support group. I think for Lisa, it was that she needed to support herself, and I think other people, they just want to be a part of that community. They
Well, did you need it also?
I did too, yes. No, but I'm just saying, I know you said that the reason that you wanted to was because you wanted that support.
Right.
You know? And I think but also you have to feel comfortable about the place that you're in and comfortable about sharing. And you know, for us, it was something by that point. We had been to a couple of different support groups, and we found that for the first one that Lisa mentioned, where there was a child there, that was very uncomfortable. But some of the people that we met, we did talk to after, and they ultimately joined us in the support group that we started.
Yeah, like I would not recommend having children at the support group.
Well, and I think that's also something that the questions that people should ask about the support group, is it a primary infertility support group
or
secondary?
We were very judgmental. I'm ashamed to say this. We were very judgmental when people with secondary infertility would come to our group. You know, what are they doing here? They already have a kid. They have no right to be here. Like, I feel horrible that I even thought that. That's just where we were. And, you know, I see
a
different perspective, obviously. But it is important, though, to decide, like, if you are going to start a support group, are you just going to have it be, are you going to have it be just primary infertility, or are you going to mix primary and secondary, or just secondary? Because they're two different, even though they're going through the same thing, it is two different populations of people, two different experiences. And sometimes mixing the two, you know, I don't know.
And I think it's also helpful to know if it's a support group that's run by a counselor, if the counselor has experience with infertility or understands the terminology. Because I know Lisa talked about one of the other support groups that we attended, and the counselor had a lot of great general cognitive skills to deal with stress and anxiety, but when we started when we started throwing around the acronyms,
didn't get anything out. I don't know what group you were at, but I didn't get anything out of that group.
Well, I thought she tried to deal with the stress levels, but all right. Anyway, so we agreed to disagree.
She
on
seemed
that.
More voyeuristic to me, like, ooh, tell me about the sex. What's this? And ew, they stick a wand inside you. I don't know.
Okay.
Like I said,
remember that
I didn't get much out of
that. But the thing I remember the most was just the deer in the headlight looks whenever we started with the acronyms, the IUIs, the IVFs, anything that had to do with the drug or the protocols and the regimens. And a lot of those questions come up at those support groups. And I think it was ultimately the support group grew a life of its own away from the counselor. Everybody just kind of talked amongst themselves. So.
And I think with the peer-to-peer group, it's important to have not just people who are brand new to infertility, but have some seasoned infertility veterans in there, so they can sort of help them navigate through their feelings and open up a little more. Because obviously, after what Denny and I have Denny went from swearing me to secrecy to writing a book, okay? So, and appearing on national television. So he's come a long way. So I think that it's important that whoever is running the meeting, that you're comfortable sharing detailed experience, you know, and really opening up. I mean, if you're going to if you're going to have a support group, really open up and get to the core of whatever it is that you're going through, whatever the issue is, because otherwise, what's the point? You might as well just talk to your acquaintances and friends and family who have no clue what's going on. But it's like you need a soft place to fall. And that's what a peer-to-peer group is. That's what it was for Denny and I. It was our soft place to fall for those 2 years. And that's what I want to give back to people.
I couldn't agree more. So I think that's, we've taken up about close to 30 minutes. So I don't know if you want us to go on or if there's any questions that anyone has for us.
Yeah, that is so much great information. And I can just feel your enthusiasm for the work that you've done. And usually just for the people listening who will be listening on the recording, we often have people pop onto the call after it begins. And tonight we haven't had any. But I have some questions that I would love to ask you guys, if that's okay.
Sure,
because there will
sure.
be a lot of people listening on the Resolve website to this recording as time goes along. So one of the things that really, really struck me, Denny, was, and I'm directing this to you, because you talked in the very beginning about sort of operating under that sort of cone of silence, so to speak, in the beginning, and not, you know, just sort of swearing everybody to secrecy around your situation. And you moved so amazingly from being in that place to, you know, starting a support group. And I just, you know, I'm just so impressed with that. And I, you know, I feel like, wow, what was it? Was it sort of desperation? Was it just getting to the point where you realize you just were going to explode?
I think it started,
and you didn't
actually. I stayed very closed off, and before we started with support groups, we actually did go to a fertility therapist, and it was mm-hmm. that I actually started by journaling. Writing has always kind of been my way of expressing my feelings about things, and so I started talking about it. Just in the journaling, I just kind of wrote about it and just to get it out, just to get it out on my system. And I think it was Lisa, she actually posted one of the journals that I wrote on a blog.
Mm-hmm.
It was Inside. And I was terrified by it because I just thought there was a point about 3 or 4 years into our cycles where, we had pursued all kinds of things. We were doing immune treatment therapy, all kinds of things. And I was checked out. I didn't want to know anything about any of the cycles. I didn't want, it was Lisa's thing. And it was kind of one of those days where we got some results, test results back, and Lisa just, she melted down completely. And it was at that moment after about, it was probably, I think we've been doing it for 2 or 3 years that I suddenly realized that she really needed me to be a part of it. We had done all kinds of things together in our life. We had pursued all of our goals together. And mm-hmm. she said, as she threw all these papers against the wall and said, we're never going to have a baby. She said, I can't do this anymore. I can't do this anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And it just instantly light bulb moment struck me that the two words she was leaving off at the end of that was by myself. I can't do this anymore by myself.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. And so at that point I started to embrace the idea of, started showing her more of the stuff that I was writing about the experience that started us on kind of finding a common ground between the two of us. But then Lisa wanted to post what I wrote. She wanted to see what other women thought about what I was saying. And she posted it. And I got all these responses one response in particular was that you are, because I really felt like I was putting my manhood out there by lack of manhood at that time, I thought, on display. But what the response I got from one in particular was that you're 10 times more a man for sharing this than suffering in silence alone.
Mm.
And from that point on, I found that it was something that I really wanted to talk about. I really wanted to be more open about it. And the more I talked about it, the more I became open about it and talked about it. Number one, the closer Lisa and I got. And number two, the better I felt. I felt like I wasn't holding on to all this toxic, all this anger, all this stuff wasn't building up inside me. And Lisa and I all of a sudden went from complete lack of intimacy, complete lack on opposite sides of the ring, to finding a way back to that intimacy. Even if I was holding her hand while another man was putting an ultrasound wand in her to help us have a baby, I got it. I finally figured out that by holding her hand right there, we were still connecting to our own version of having a baby. And it just, it clicked. And then from that point on, I couldn't shut up. And I'm sure Lisa wishes I would have shut up about some things, but I just, I know she cringes sometimes when I talk about this stuff, but I mean, it still should be a beautiful experience for people to have a baby, even if it's through with the help of doctors. And that, if there's anything I can get across to guys in the whole experience, is that the more a part of this you are, the more complete a father you are when you ultimately do achieve success. And I mean, I have a closeness to my daughter that I don't think I would have had if I hadn't embraced the path to get there, the journey to get there. And it's just, I mean, women have such an amazing capacity to create life and grow life. And I saw firsthand with Lisa's battle. I mean, she is my hero. She continues to be my hero to this day, because it's amazing to me how hard women fight for the chance to have a child. I mean, you know, as a guy, I could pursue careers, I can pursue all kinds of ambitions and everything, but the ability to create life is foreign to men. But somehow this experience connected me to that, and I'm grateful for it. And so if I can, the more I can talk about it, and the more I can convey it, the better I feel, and the more I feel like, okay, I'm giving back, because you know the universe finally blessed us with our daughter, and I feel like it's because I opened up to the whole experience.
Yeah, and so that opportunity of having your support group really supported the conversation.
Oh, absolutely. The talks that we would have in those groups, and Lisa's right, we laughed so hard, and we found such humor in everything that we were going through. It wasn't just that drudgery, and we could sit in those groups. We could cast those evil. We could actually vocalize all those evil thoughts we had about the normal childbearing public, because it was a safe zone for that, and we could have those jokes, you know. So we were the victims of the shooting blanks jokes, and we could just have that fun. We could have those moments where of that love levity that just helped us to get through the next cycle, the next shots, the next 45 days of our life while we waited for a positive beta test. Mm-hmm. And it was and honestly, those support groups were our lifeline. And I remember one particular Easter after when Lisa was about to have surgery, and there was just this 1,000 kid Easter egg hunt, and I saw Lisa, and I just saw her eyes fill up in tears, and she ran across the field, and I didn't know where she was, and it turns out she was on the phone with one of our support group friends getting support. That was her lifeline. There's nothing I could have said to her at that point that would have comforted her, but the support group member was able to talk her off that emotional ledge, and I'm grateful for it, because there's so many times when as men, there's only so much we can share, and they have that support system is so important to get through to get through those really tough times, those bottoms, so that you can get to the bottom of get to the top of the mountain again. So,
and Lisa, something that you said that really struck me was the difference between online support versus face-to-face support groups, and that you've used online support and have found a lot of value in that, but it's different from what you get out of that in-person group.
Yes, it is totally different, because like I said, there's just something more, you know, it's just more personal, because you're sitting there with this group of people, and this is what it is. You're actually able to have a real conversation, because online, you're not really having a conversation. You're kind of listening in to other people's conversations or what they posted on a board. You know, I guess you can do some chatting, you know, in the chat rooms, but nothing takes the place, I don't think, of that in person, where you really can look into someone else's eyes and see, wow, I'm not the only one that has that same look of pain in their eyes. Mm-hmm. For me, that was just like, I needed that connection. And I don't know if women need that more. You know, women like to talk, and we're more communicative, and, you know, it's seeing people's nonverbals. It's just a lot you can't get through a computer screen.
Yeah, and so that contact is really powerful.
Yes, it really was. Like, you know, we'd give each other hugs, and it wasn't, you know, not to sound too sappy, but it wasn't just like a hug we'd give each other. It was like kind of a hanging on for dear life kind of, you know what I mean? Like, like I needed that. Thank you. Like, they just hug you different. I don't know how to describe it, but the people in that group, when they hugged me, it's like they were healing me.
Yeah, it feels sort of like two souls really sort of being there together.
Yes, and you feel, and then I know I also feel like, because I built so, you know, such good friendships, I had a different perspective on my infertility because we talked about this in several groups. We'd say, you know, if it wasn't for our experience of infertility, our paths may have never crossed. And how sad that would have been, that mm-hmm. we never would have been part of each other's lives. We would have mm-hmm. missed out on this incredible friendship and this incredible journey together. So yeah. it kind of shifts your perspective a little bit. For me, it did anyways.
So what are your thoughts, both of you, on what keeps people from going to face-to-face support groups? So when you had your group going and the word was out there and you had people coming, I'm sure there were other people in the community that were having fertility problems who weren't coming. What's your best guess? What are your thoughts on why people don't come? What keeps them from coming?
Fear and denial. Mm-hmm. Fear, because once you go to a support group, then it's like you're admitting, I'm infertile. Like, and that's denial too. You know what I mean? Like, well, we don't need that yet, because I'll never forget, this was long before we were even thinking about having a child. We heard about one of Denny's colleagues who had to go through IVF. And Denny and I had the nerve to look at each other and say, thank God we'll never have to go through that. So it's like you just assume you're not going to have to do it. And even though the doctor might be telling you, well, you're going to need to do IUI or IVF, or you have a low sperm count, I think in the beginning there is that denial. Like, we're not like them. We're not like those infertile people. We're not going to be those people that have to have those test tube babies, you know, that kind of thing. So I think it's denial. And then maybe once you get past that, then it's just fear of, you know, actually opening up. And you're very vulnerable. I mean, you're out there in the world and people are kind of telling you, relax, go on vacation. It's not a big deal. So it's really scary to go to that first support group and really put yourself out there and be vulnerable, which again is why I was saying it's important to have some seasoned infertility veterans there who can really put you at ease at the very beginning and let mm-hmm. you know that this is a safe place. This is a safe environment. Say anything you want here. Anything goes. That was our motto. Like, whatever you need to do, you do it in here. Because out there, it's not safe.
Yeah. Yeah. Kind of like joining a club that you never really wanted to be a member of.
No, and like I said, once you go there, it's like then you're admitting, oh, my mm-hmm. God. Like, I noticed some couples, you know, they come for their first time, and then they'd come, like, the next time, or I'd get an email, or they'd call me and say, oh my gosh, Lisa, going to that support group scared the crap out of me. And I'd say, why? And they'd say, because, like, you and Denny, you're on your fifth IVF, and that other lady, she had a tubal pregnancy, and that other one lost twins, you know. And so it kind of scares them sometimes because, first of all, they never thought they'd even have to go and do infertility treatments, and now they're in the support group, and they're hearing all these, like, horror stories. So sometimes they're a little shell-shocked by it, but they always came back. I don't think we had anyone come and then not come back. We always we had, like, the same people, and then the word kind of got out, you know, and every time, like, if they would fail a cycle, it was funny because you almost felt like you were letting the group down. You know, Denny and I, we'd fail another cycle, and we're like, oh, we got to go tell them. Like, you knew that they were rooting for you. And then you have to go, and you could, like, everyone was so disappointed for each other. And then I found that they were equally very celebratory whenever anyone did have success. And they understood, like, in our group, we did have people come after they got pregnant. And that's the other issue that comes up in support groups. Are you allowed to still come once you get pregnant? Mm-hmm. Because we had a lot of people in our group who had repeat miscarriages. And, you know, mm-hmm. even if you've never experienced a miscarriage, getting pregnant is just like the first little step, huge step, granted, but you have a long waste. 9 months is a long time after you've been through everything that an infertile couple has been through to get to that point. And so they still kind of need that support. I know I did when I was pregnant. I was nervous the whole time. Mm-hmm. So, but that's another issue that you have to think about too when it comes to support groups. You know, how are the other people going to deal with that?
And so how did you guys work that? Did you sort of have some ground rules in place for the group that you put out there at the beginning of each group? How did you set those group norms?
Yeah, we did. We you know, we just ask that people not sit there and rub their belly and, you know, just go on and on. Like if you're there, you're there because you're still needing support. And what we found is that it actually kind of just worked itself out, because the couples who were very nervous and very scared about the pregnancy kept coming to the group. And that's why they were coming, because they were scared. And, you know, and then the couples that got pregnant and were like, okay, we're good, we don't need you guys anymore, they just kind of stopped coming. They would let us know, or they would tell the group, you know, they would always be very thankful and grateful and say, you know, I think we're going to step away for a while. So it did kind of have a way of just kind of working itself out. Now, in our case, it was a little, we weren't sure what to do, because we were the group leader. So when I got pregnant, it was like, so we kind of just discussed it with the group and asked them. Mm-hmm. And we left it open. Like, if they're not comfortable, I still needed support. And I know Denny did too. I was very nervous. And so they were very open to us still coming, but I was very conscientious. You know, I didn't sit there and rub my belly or go on and on about stuff that you would hear, you know.
Yeah, but you didn't go talk about pregnancy symptoms. It was
my fears and anxieties. Yeah. And we stuck it out the whole time I was pregnant, we did it. But if it ever came to a point, like we kind of had an agreement, if it came to a point where I felt like I was good, I didn't need that support anymore, or they were too uncomfortable with it, please tell us. And they could still run the group, you know, even without us there, that we would just assign someone else as the leader, and they could still have the space that we rented, and, you know, we weren't going to just leave them high and dry. Mm-hmm. So that's, it just kind of really does, but you do have to sort of have ground rules. Same with the secondary infertility people. If they come in, you know, they can't be sitting there complaining about, you know, their children or child.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes they need that, though. So that's what I'm saying. Sometimes you have to have a separate group.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good point.
Well, I just wanted to address real quick, you asked why you don't think a lot of people go to support groups or want to be a part of them. A lot of the guys that I talked to honestly thought they had a preconceived notion about it just being a nonstop crying Kleenex session, you know, where everybody was just, it was just very sad and weepy. And what I found is that a lot of them told me after the first couple of meetings that they were really surprised, just because there was a lot of laughter, there was a lot of joking around, there was a lot of camaraderie with the guys, and there was just a kind of a sense of there was a sense of community, like they were joining a community, like you said, that maybe at first they didn't think they wanted to join, but once they got there, it was kind of cool, and they enjoyed the talking about things that they really. It just normalized the whole experience. And again, but I think a lot of times going into it, a lot of people have not had experience, especially guys, have not had experience with a support group. So they think it's going to be like this Hollywood version of everybody going through and doing past life regressions. And I don't know. I mean, that was what I had in my head, and that's why I didn't want to go. So I'm thinking they're going to ask me what, you know, about my relationship with my mother. And I didn't know. I had no idea. So, but when we went to them and actually went to our first therapist, I got rid of those preconceived notions. And by the time we were in the support group, it was just, I realized that the support group was just a great way for people to talk about a common experience, their common experiences in an uncommon way to get to their parents.
As women, I think we're more used to talking about, you know, our monthly cycles and cramps, and like we're more comfortable with that. Whereas, you know, men don't sit around and talk about their sperm counts or things like that. They just don't. So I think that's probably why a lot of guys don't want to come either. Who wants to sit there and discuss their testicles and penis and sperm counts?
Yeah, sort of like exercising a whole new muscle or something.
It really is.
Yeah,
but these guys, once they went to the first meeting, and they would keep coming back. That was the amazing thing, is that I was worried that we would have one group and all that where the couples would be there, and then after that it would just be the women. But the remarkable thing was that the couples kept coming back. And you would see, it was amazing watching the body language change from the first meeting, where usually the guy was all closed off with his arms crossed and, you know, kind of away from his wife, or maybe just gave her a little consoling pat when she cried. And then boom, the next one, they're holding hands and they're smiling at each other. And it's all of a sudden you saw that intimacy start to return. And we're like, this is really a good thing. You know, this is just, they're finding a way to normalize this as a couple again, even though they don't get to make love the old fashioned way to have the baby. They're still loving each other while they're trying to have a baby. And it was just so cool to watch that happen. So,
yeah. So I just have one last question, and then we'll close. And you touched on this briefly a little bit ago, but are there any sort of, you know, tips or specific questions that you want to suggest that people ask before joining a group?
I think for sure, primary versus secondary infertility.
Okay.
How to handle the once you get pregnant.
How to handle the pregnancy and whether or not the people running the group, you know, what their fertility experience is.
Mm-hmm.
Just, I think those are, I mean, for us, I think that the feedback we got was that having somebody who understands fertility and having it be a primary fertility group or knowing clearly what those rules
and
were
the
really helped a lot of people. Yeah,
where,
and the location.
Where is it going to be? Is it going to be somewhere mm-hmm. private or a restaurant?
Okay, yeah.
And the group needs to be consistent. And ideally, mm-hmm. after 2 or 3 months of getting it started, there's usually a stronger personality in the group who would be willing to take on a backup. So, if we were cycling, we didn't want to have to cancel the group because I think the continuity of support is really important for everybody. So we found someone who would run the group in our absence in the event that there was a sudden bout of hyperstimulation or something that caused us to have to cancel. There's a backup person. So I think mm-hmm. you build it as you go along, but you know, those would just be some tips and things that evolved as we were doing
right.
it.
And even though I know you said this is all volunteer, and it is volunteer, but people have to be very committed, like Danny was just saying, so that there is that continuity and that consistency, because that's very mm-hmm. important when you're going through this, that you know that you have that to rely on.
Yeah. Well, those are great tips, and just everything that you've said is so it's so helpful and informative, and I think just really encouraging, because I know from my own experience how incredibly valuable support groups are, are there any last thoughts or final words that you just want to share with people tonight before we end?
I would just say, being a guy who benefited from the support groups, I would just say to anybody who's considering a group, or a woman who's considering joining a group, try to find a group where you can bring your husband. I mean, because I think that it's an experience where, for the most part, infertility kind of drives couples apart. Most, the guys aren't able to be there for all the cycles. They're not able to be there for all the appointments and the blood draws and everything. But being able to be there to talk about kind of how things are going, to check in, I think is really important for couples. And I would just say, if there's any way to do it as a couple, then to attend the support group as a couple, and just for guys to just be open to talking about it, because it really is beneficial to talk about this stuff, because it's difficult. It's difficult to transition from, again, that Hollywood version of this is how we're going to have a baby to the reality of medically assisted baby making. It's really a different world, but it's not as drastic. It really becomes normal once you're around other people who are going through it.
Yeah. Well, thank you both of you so much. It's been a really energetic presentation, and again, I love your enthusiasm and all that you've have given to the couples in your community and to Resolve for running your support group.
Yeah, and we really appreciate everything Resolve does too and continues to do. And again, we just feel like our success is definitely a part. Resolve is definitely a big part of our success with all the support they gave, not just with the support groups, but just all the information and the resources and everything that we had that we always knew we could go to when we didn't know where else to turn. And just seeing that's still a beacon of hope after all these years is just, I think it's a tribute mm-hmm. to everything that Resolve and you guys do. So.
Yeah, and we're looking yeah. forward to the Night of Hope. We're going out to New York City, October 2nd.
Oh, that's great. That's great. Well, enjoy. And again, thanks so much. And take care of both of you and for people who will be listening to this. Thanks. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
The moderator has disconnected. The call will now end.